This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 9th of March 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper. First, a sincere apology that there was no talking newspaper last week, but I'm sure you will understand that with the bad weather, it was not possible for the readers and the presenter to make it into the studio. However, we're back in business again with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 8th of March 2018, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
Paul Newman.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Beauty and the Beast, Fun and Fury as City Hit by Snow, £1 million county boost for Sports Centre, and Mum's £104,000 hike. That's mums in the plural. So we'll start with the story behind the first news item.
Beauty and the Beast, Fun and Fury as the city is hit by snow. It departed as quickly as it had arrived. The Beast from the east met Storm Emma on Thursday, and the resulting clash left a car park of thick snow across Hampshire. But a sudden change of temperature meant it had almost gone by Sunday. For 2 days it caused chaos on the roads. Events were cancelled, schools and libraries were closed, offices, shops and restaurants were empty, diggers stood unused and waste collections postponed. Hospital chiefs were forced to plead with any staff who could make it in to come to Winchester's hospital to help ease the pressure caused by the snow. For some, it meant unexpected journeys to hospital. Actress Sarah Parrish, aged 49, who lives near Alsford, was hospitalised after breaking a leg in a sledging accident. She fell badly after standing on a sledge as if it was a snowboard in her garden. She posted from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, "Day two in Winchester Hospital. Looks like I'll be operated on today," she told fans. "They're putting a great big pin right through my shin. No sleep last night. Was on enough morphine to knock the Navy out, but still in pain. Note to self, cheap plastic sledges are for sitting in and gently trundling down primary slopes. Not, and this is in capital letters, not a substitute for a stand-up snowboard." Among the well-wishers was Bishop's Waltham raised actress Amanda Holden, who commented, "Darling, I just cannot believe this. Gin on its way." The owners of one of Winchester's oldest buildings had a nasty shock when a car slid into it. The car was spotted by a passerby who said it had skidded down Blue Ball Hill and crashed into the corner of the old Blue Ball. The witness added that the corner of the inn, which is on the junction with St John Street, was completely caved in. Meanwhile, council leaders say they will analyse their response to the crises and learn lessons. Hampshire's 5,000 miles of road took a severe beating from the weather, but council leader Roy Perry said the well-honed machine sprang into action with good partnership working. Including 100 farmers kept on a retainer and paid an hourly rate to help out, as well as 400 4x4 volunteers driving key workers to work, Councillor Perry said the £1 million spent in 2011 on salt and grit boxes for residential streets had been used properly for the first time. But one Hampshire hero disagreed and criticised police, the council highways, as well as drivers. Peter Rockall from Cheriton said he spent 12 hours battling 6-foot snowdrifts to help cars stuck in the snow. the 35-year-old preschool teacher said he was awake at 3 a.m. when he realized the severity of the situation. He and friend Peter Sharp spent the rest of Friday towing cars in really dangerous conditions along the A272 up from Cheriton to Cheesfoot Head, the 600-foot high hill near Winchester. He said there was a sign to say road closed, but people had just pushed it over and were ignoring it. He pulled an elderly woman's car up to the top of the hill, but when I asked her if she was going for a hospital appointment or something, but she said she was going for a massage. There were people saying they were going in shopping for Winchester. Paramedics have praised helpful residents who cleared snow to allow ambulances to get moving. The crews were able to transport stranded motorists who had got stuck on the A272 between Winchester and Petersfield, thanks to one, a resident, who cleared snow with his tractor. South Central Ambulance Service tweeted on Friday morning, "Thank you to everyone for their efforts overnight and this morning, especially Peter Payne from Alsford, who cleared 15 miles of snow in his tractor so our ambulance crew with stranded motorists on board could get off the A272 around midnight last night and into the warmth." A memorial service for the former leader of Hampshire Council, Ken Thornburgh, was postponed on Friday. It is not yet known when the service will be held. One primary school stayed open on the coldest March day on record, and despite chaos on the roads. Children at St Anthony's in Fareham said they'd had the best day ever, while hundreds of other schools were shut due to heavy snowfall. Several events at the weekend fell victim before the thaw set in. A public exhibition on the potential redevelopment of Station Approach in Winchester was postponed at Hampshire's Record Office on Sussex Street on Saturday. Terminal illness charity Marie Curie said extreme weather has hampered fundraising efforts in Hampshire as it kicks off its biggest annual appeal. Jacqueline Lucas, Great Daffodil Appeal Manager for Marie Curie, said, "We're really excited to be kicking off this year's appeal, but the extreme weather is certainly proving a challenge. We are worried that it will have a significant impact on our fundraising, so we want people to know that they can also donate online and via text."
£1 million, county boost for sports centre. Plans for a major sports centre in Winchester have received a big boost. The City Council has confirmed that £1 million has been earmarked by the County Council for the proposed £30 million development at Bar End. It says that that support from Hampshire shows the commitment to working with partners to deliver a first-class sport and leisure facility, which will improve the general health and well-being of residents throughout the district and the wider Hampshire area. Additionally, those in need of specialist treatment will be able to use a new hydrotherapy suite and 8 treatment rooms. The proposed sport and leisure park will replace River Park Leisure Centre and will provide a comprehensive package of indoor and outdoor activities, including a 50-metre pool, a separate teaching pool with movable floor, 250 spectator seats, and a water play area. Other facilities include an 8-court sport hall, a clip and climb facility, 4 squash courts, 200 gym stations, 2 large studios, and 1 spin studio. There is generally support for the scheme, but many people want to see a 12-court hall, which would be bigger than the present facility at River Park. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, said, "Hampshire's substantial contribution towards the cost of the new sport and leisure park underpins the strong partnership between us and demonstrates their commitment to help to the health and wellbeing of our residents and visitors." Roy Perry, County Council leader, said, "We are working closely with the City Council so that not only all those who are currently living, studying and working in Winchester, but also Hampshire residents living further afield, have regular access to a range of modern, high-quality sport, recreational and specialist treatment centres under one roof.
Mum's £104,000 hike. Sorry, that was a bit reserved. For those of you who are interested in apostrophes, you'll be pleased to know that the apostrophe is after the S in mums. A team of more than seven Hampshire mums have raised more than £100,000 by scaling the heights of Everest in just 4 days, all in the aid of tackling brain tumours. The mums, who all have children at Twyford School, braved temperatures as low as minus 30 degrees centigrade to ski 8,848 metres uphill during some of the worst conditions the Swiss Alps have seen. The team included Tanya Ritchie from Bracefield, whose five-year-old Toby has a low-grade brain tumour. Tanya, along with six other mums, formed Toby's team and took on the epic challenge to raise funds for vital research into childhood brain tumours. So far, the group has raised more than £104,000 through the Everest in the Alps challenge. But Tanya said there were still a few more things lined up to raise money. Tanya said, Twyford School has been utterly amazing in their kindness and intelligent, practical help with Toby and his brothers. And it was at Twyford where, having just moved from London 5 years ago, Toby fell ill during his first term at the school in reception. So, with the help of his teachers and the school staff, lots of people have played a role in keeping an eye on Toby for the last 5 years. At first helping him to come to school for short periods while on 18 months of chemo, to now helping him not get too tired and making sure he can take part in as much school life as possible. This has been the best medicine for a little boy who just wants to get on with his life but can't do it in the same way as his friends. Tanya added, the challenge has ruled our lives for months now. The training, the fundraising, covering the cost of kit and the trip. Thank God we were prepared. Our determination to make a difference saw us through. Toby's team were tested to the limit during the challenge as they climbed more than 2,500 metres every day to reach their target, burning off the equivalent calories of running several back-to-back marathons on each of the 4 days. The team was made up of Tanya, NHS physiotherapist Tiggy Corbin and Emily Bray, Twyford School teachers Philippa McNeil and Sarah O'Gorman, local farmer B.B. Corbett and Lucy DeLaslo. Along the route, the team spent the nights in mountain huts. Funds raised by all the teams will go to the Everest Centre, financed by the Brain Tumour Charity. The centre will fund vital research projects that will help us understand more about low-grade paediatric brain tumours and trial new treatments. Globally, over 26,000 children diagnosed. The location of low-grade tumours in the brain often makes them only partially operable.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Brand, Kitty Brand, at Abbots Barton Nursing Home on the 23rd of February, aged 91. Elliot, John Elliot, in Winchester Hospital on the 25th of February, aged 81. Faithful, Ken Faithful, on the 27th of February in Moorside Nursing Home, aged 80. Lane, Christine Victoria Lane, on the 15th of February. Luland, Lucy Muriel Luland, on the 22nd of February, aged 81. Rawlings, Mick Rawlings, at home on the 22nd of February, aged 78. Rich, Michael Anthony, known as Mick Rich, on the 23rd of February at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, aged 86. Smith, Patrick Smith, at Southampton General Hospital on the 28th of February, aged 82. Twentyman, John Twentyman, died in a swimming accident in Anguilla on the 24th of February. Wagstaff, Lisa Wagstaff, on the 25th of February, aged 94. And next we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, and he's entitled it Winchester, the Perfect City. I've never been one for local politics. I have assumed that the roads are maintained, new housing gets built, schools have teachers, the bins are emptied, and the hospital will operate on me when I really need it. Winchester appears to be an example of a perfect city. It has everything that a good city should have: a university, a hospital, law courts, a theatre, a commercial centre, industry, and of course, local elections for democracy. But the role of local government in this age of austerity is being constantly squeezed. We are aware of how much the NHS is stretched and social care cut back, often especially for the most vulnerable, both young and old. Charities are taking much more of the load that local government used to provide. I've counted over 150 charities that have Winchester in their registered names. They meet all sorts of needs for children, the elderly, people with learning disabilities, people who are hungry. I could go on. The bad news is that the squeeze is going to get worse. Our national government requires local government to squeeze more out of less. Local government continues to find it harder to deliver the services we expect and seeks to be more entrepreneurial. So how are we going to respond? Do we think local politics is important or not? I went to one public cabinet meeting that dealt with the station approach, one of the many major developments the City Council is consulting on. The proposal involves redeveloping the cattle market site and the Carfax car park near the station. I was amazed at the level of detail, research, and professionalism that was evident in evolving this concept and possibilities for this development. There were about 10 people present in the public seating, and only one person registered to speak and asked the cabinet a question. This suggests that out of the whole population that the districts of Winchester City Council serve, there aren't many of us who are really bothered about how our city develops, at least to turn up to a public meeting. At 5:30 on a Tuesday evening, most of us are either travelling home from work or preparing food for our evening meal. A similar number of people were present when the council passed the budget. We have other priorities. But how are we going to feel when it's we who need the charity that fills the gap the budget no longer covers? If the current constriction of the welfare state continues, we will know increasing numbers of friends or family who need the help of charities. Volunteers who take your mother to hospital because there aren't enough ambulances. A friend who will secretly go to the food bank where there isn't enough food in the fridge for the final 4 days of the month. It will be increasingly important for us to use the opportunities we have to converse, consult, and collaborate. We cannot live in the perfect city purely as consumers, who pick and choose which services or products we want to buy. we must develop relationships using the forums of community that are available to us so that we work out how we want to live together. Local politics and local charities are both really important.
The next letter, is it?
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So now we'll start with the first letter.
First letter is entitled New Road Needed, and it comes from somebody in South Wanston, David Selby. Sir, I would like to add my support to the letters written last week by Sally Penton and Jill Hennigan about the proposed changes to Junction 9, the M3-A34 interchange. It does not tackle the real problem of traffic moving south on the A34, having an accident or breakdown, resulting in all traffic being diverted through Winchester, which the closure of the Andover Road will only exacerbate. The M3-A34 alterations are only intended to speed traffic onto the A34 going north. The money for this effort could be more profitably used by running a dual carriageway from Junction 11 to Three Maids Island, thus speeding the northbound traffic and at the same time providing an escape route for southbound traffic when stoppages occur, as they surely will, on the A34, thus avoiding heavy traffic trundling through the King's Barton Estate and on through the city in perpetuity. The new road suggested could be completed without causing any inconvenience to existing motorway traffic. I hope that this frequent diversion of heavy traffic through the centre of Winchester will figure prominently in the proposed movement strategy for the city and with those tasked with addressing current pollution problems. Highways England, please address the bigger picture of traffic in and around Winchester, and not just sticking a plaster solution to moving container lorries more quickly to the Midlands. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
And the second letter is on the same subject. This one is written by Michael Fielding. Sir, further to the recent correspondence about the A34 in the Winchester area, letters February 22nd, I feel that there is another aspect to this road which needs to be addressed, the speed limit. My wife and I have used the A34 for 46 years. During that time, we have seen traffic levels increase both in quantity and speed. The Newbury Bypass, which opened in November 1998, was a great relief both to local and to through traffic road users. Up until that time, it had been said that the town was the main bottleneck for traffic travelling from southern Spain to Glasgow. The A34 then started to draw in more traffic, which could and did travel faster along its length than before. To my mind, it is a two-lane trunk road masquerading as a motorway, and my suggestion is it should now have a 60-mile-an-hour limit for the 50 miles from Winchester to Oxford. It should also be borne in mind that overtaking lorries take a long time to achieve their aim, especially on the frequent hills, and this causes irritation to other drivers. In addition, there is a practice which started in the last 5 to 10 years whereby traffic joining a main road just barges into the first traffic lane without allowing priority to the existing main road users. This is not something which is peculiar to the A34, but happens throughout the country. That's written by Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Fulford, Winchester.
And continuing the same theme, Judith Martin heads her letter, "Consult More." Sir, it's understandable that the drop-in information day on March the 3rd on the station area proposals should have been cancelled because of the snow. And I gather there is to be a rescheduled event. The drop-in information evening on Wednesday the 7th is still to come at the time of writing. But I also gather that the amount of consultation is supposed to be similar to the excellent exercise that was carried out for the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, that is, Silver Hill. Two Winchester events with a total of 7 hours, 4 hours on Saturday, 3 on Wednesday, is really not remotely comparable. And a large part of the point of any consultation regarding the station area is surely to consult commuters. Yet the weekday event is over by 7 p.m. and anyone who lives outside Winchester but comes into the station to commute to work may not want to come in for this purpose on a Saturday. The Alresford and Bishop's Waltham events are a mere 2 hours each on Saturday, March the 17th, so presumably officers will be rushing to move information boards from one location to the other. What I hear about the latest plan is encouraging, particularly the retention of both the Register Office and the Conservative Club, which were to be swept away in the previous plans. But even the best scheme in the world needs validation, and these hours mean not nearly enough people will be able to see them. More, please. So writes Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester.
The next item is entitled Paperless. It comes from John Scott in Exton. "Sir, read the editorial comment 'Too soon for a paperless future at Winchester City Council.' That was the best editorial comment that I've read in many years. You are so right in what you have written." John Scott, Beacon Hill Lane, Exton. He's referring to an editorial comment of February the 22nd.
Next letter is written by somebody called Name and Address Supplied. I don't actually know them myself. And it's called Cold Callers, but it's got nothing to do with the cold weather. Cold Callers. "Sir, twice in the last 2 weeks, I have had young men knocking on the door to sell cleaning products at about 7 p.m. I usually have someone knocking every 3 months or so, and until this time have always fallen for their story that they are ex-convicts trying to get themselves back on the straight and narrow, usually saying they're from Middlesbrough. The cleaning products are always overpriced, but I used to buy something anyway. This time I became suspicious because the young man regaled me with stories about how my neighbours had sworn at him, told him to go back to the north where he belonged, and similar unpleasant remarks. Now, I know all my neighbours and quickly realised the whole story was a fabrication. Last night, a new pair came to the door, this time saying they were from Redcar, not Middlesbrough. I asked to see their ID, and when I took a photo of it, the pair became aggressive and quite threatening. Having spent some time online quoting from the ID paperwork, I find that it's all a big scam. These young men are apparently run by gangmasters who drive them south and send them onto the streets with their story and then move them onto another town the next day. I reported it by ringing 101, and I would urge any readers who experience these sellers to do the same, as they are operating illegally and their stories are made up. They prey on people's gullibility, like mine, and guilt that we live in an affluent city. Their stories of hardship do make me feel terrible, as I do realise how fortunate most of us are in Winchester." And that's somebody who lives in Winchester who's withheld their name and address.
Now something different. Milkman Hero. So writes Avril Burt. "Sir, in this recent cold weather, when here in the sticks the local school was closed, there were no buses, rubbish collection or post, I congratulate and thank our milkman, who left our usual order on the front step. So writes Avril Burt of Downs Road, South Wanston.
Pigeon problem. This comes from Chris Higgins in Winchester. So there's no doubt pigeons do make a terrible mess in the city centre. The Buttercross is covered with bird droppings, which are a health hazard to the families and children who sit there. Research on the internet shows that pigeons spread tuberculosis, salmonella, and other infectious diseases. Growing numbers of feral pigeons roost on the ledges near St. Lawrence's in the square, where the church warden has to scrape and hose down the pavement before each service to sanitise the entrance to the church. The shops in the area also suffer from similar contamination on their window sills and awnings, and the pavements need to be negotiated carefully to avoid treading in this foul mess. The problem has become much worse since the advent of our cafe society, with fast food outlets creating easy picking for these birds amongst the coffee tables and market stalls in the street, and the misguided members of the public who feed them. The homing instincts of the pigeon is to breed increasing generations in the same location, so once established, their numbers escalate every year. Our historic buildings are also being damaged by the build-up of guano, and nests block chimneys and rainwater downpipes. Netting, bird spikes, and sonic devices have all failed to keep pigeons away from the city centre. You recently questioned four members of the public in the Chronicle Your Say column, suggesting it was not a problem. But sadly, you asked the wrong people. None of those selected lived or worked where they were affected by these issues. Your correspondent, P. Dollery, wrote last week, letters March the 1st, about the impact pigeons were having on the residents of Winall. So it's a widespread problem. The Mayor of London recognised what a nightmare it had become in Trafalgar Square and eliminated the pigeons. So I appeal to the City Council to take similar effective action to make Winchester a more pleasant and healthier place. Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
And our next letter is on a very exciting subject. It's about Brexit. It's written by Lewis North. Sir, my dad runs a local garage which employs around 7 mechanics. He imports car parts directly from Sweden. I'm very concerned about what a hard Brexit means for his business. If we leave the customs union, he will have to pay much higher tariffs from the EU countries and wait longer for the parts to go through customs checks. I've written to my local MP, George Hollingbury, who I hope will consider voting against the withdrawal bill if it means the UK leaving the customs union. I understand Mr. Hollingbury has party loyalties, but if Brexit damaged local people's livelihoods, I hope he puts their interests first. That's written by Lewis North, Liberal Democrat councillor, candidate for the Upper Meon Valley, Oxford Road, Cheriton.
This letter is written by Bob Barnes about Winchester's lost railway. And it's accompanied by a photograph of about half a dozen commuters, I suppose they would be, and they were on the last day of passenger trains at Winchester Chesil station in March 1960. Sir, Mr. Rod Youngman, in the Chronicle letters of February the 22nd, regretted the hasty closure of the Newbury-Winchester line to freight traffic in 1963. Part 2 of the report, map number 2, Density of Freight Traffic, showed the line carried only 5,000 to 10,000 tonnes per week and showed that it did not extend further north than Didcot. Probably this would have carried freight sundries. In the report summary, part 1, page 59, Beeching said, "Freight sundries traffic is also a bad loss maker. It is handled at present between over 900 stations and depots, which causes poor wagon loading and a high level of costly transshipment of the freight whilst in transit. But if they are to stay in business, British Railways must concentrate more upon intercity flows and reduce the number of depots, for example, bar end sidings, handling this form of traffic to not more than 100. With foresight, the MAP's freight line could have been extended to the Midlands for his proposed liner trains, which had containers of different size to international containers and were a flop. The County Council wanted it for the King's Worthy Link Road, now the A34. You published a letter and a photo from Mr. Ken Coulter on July the 5th, 2002, in which he stated that the last passenger train ran through Chesil Station on March the 7th, 1960, 3 years before Beeching's 1963 report. The report, Part 1, Section 6, page 129, entitled Passenger Services Under Consideration for Withdrawal before the formulation of the report, listed Newbury Didcot as, quote, withdrawn, already implemented. So writes Bob Barnes of Chilburton Avenue, Winchester. And if you could understand that, I'm amazing.
You can.
Right, we now move on to the items of historical interest, and we have items from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago, Monday, March the 9th, 1818. The concert on Thursday evening last at St. John's House, under the patronage of the High Sheriff, was most splendidly attended. Most of the principal families in and near the neighbourhood being present, to the number we should suppose of nearly 300, the performances were well selected.
100 years ago, Saturday, March the 9th, 1918. Amidst all the sorrow and anxiety that have come with the war, one has memories of many of the innumerable efforts that have been made so thoughtfully and kindly on behalf of our splendid soldiers. At a much earlier period in the war, a series of performances were given at the local theatre by accomplished amateurs to help the comforts fund of the service battalions of the King's Royal Rifle Corps and the Rifle Brigade, and resulted in the raising of a very satisfactory sum. A most pressing demand has now arisen in connection with the King's Royal Rifles and Rifle Brigade Prisoners of War Fund, and to aid the fund, theatrical performances have again been arranged.
50 years ago, on Saturday, March the 9th, 1968, members of Winchester's Young Liberals paraded in Winchester High Street on Saturday in last week, wearing sandwich boards protesting at the British government's support of American policy in Vietnam. They distributed leaflets calling for a halt to the bombing of North Vietnam in order to bring about peace negotiations. The Young Liberals also carried out an opinion poll among shoppers in an attempt to gauge people's attitudes to the Vietnam War. This was all part of the local Young Liberals' efforts for a National Liberal Vietnam Week, which ended on Saturday, and among those taking part was Mr. John Matthew, prospective parliamentary candidate for Winchester. The results of the opinion poll were announced at the Young Liberals' fortnightly meeting at Guildhall, Winchester, on Wednesday. It was reported that the question, quote, "Are you in favour of an unconditional halt to the American bombing of North Vietnam?" End of quote. 69% of those questioned replied yes, and 31% replied no.
The next item, 25 years ago, Friday, March 5th, 1993, concerns the then notorious Twyford Down motorway cut. Anti-cutting protesters are redoubling their efforts this weekend in a last-ditch attempt to court public opinion and save Twyford Down. This weekend's planned march and rally come at the end of a week of persistent attempts by supporters of direct action to delay the digging work through chaining themselves to heavy machinery. As the first Cat 245 earth mover began work last week on the 100 feet deep motorway excavation, around 15 protesters held up workmen for over an hour after minor scuffles with Group 4 security guards. The guards failed to prevent a young woman chaining herself by the neck to one of the earth movers. After failing to detach her with bolt croppers, workmen were forced to disassemble hydraulic pipes to free the protester. Police attended, but no arrests were made. On Wednesday, a similar incident caused a temporary closing of one lane on the bypass for just under an hour as four protesters demonstrated near the Hockley Bridge.
And now we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
Okay, editorial comment. Interestingly, at the top it says Hampshire Chronicle now in our 243rd year. Well. Anyway, the heading is Be Thankful for the Beast and Emma. And just reminded that those are the names of the two storms that we had recently. The Economist will point out to the idle factories, empty offices and paralysed transport network and bemoan the millions, perhaps billions of pounds of lost production. The 2 days when tens of millions of people did little more than watch the TV or build a snowman may be considered by some to have been a waste of time. It came after a period of largely bad news. The problems of the high street stores such as Toys R Us and Maplin and the painful unwinding of the Brexit process. Now the snow has melted and there are lots of new potholes and the existing ones a little bit deeper thanks to the work of the ice. There will be many elderly people for whom the extreme cold will worsen existing conditions such as heart and respiratory issues. But perhaps the beast from the east and Storm Emma can be thanked for pointing out one vital thing, how dependent we all are on each other. People united to clear pavements and driveways, strangers put their backs into helping to push cars up icy hills, and neighbours looked out for each other, and especially the elderly. People stopped to talk to each other. Community ties are, as a result, strengthened. We don't want to overplay things, but wasn't it nice for once not to have to read people being aggressive on social media?
And a letter from Westminster is written by George Hollingbury, who is the Parliamentary Private Secretary to the Prime Minister and a Member of Parliament for Meon Valley. His name is George Hollingbury. The Prime Minister's pragmatic speech last week, setting out the hard facts of Brexit, has again shown she is able to recognise and work towards satisfying the complex, competing demands for what the country actually wants and can achieve from leaving the European Union. And when I say country, I very much mean the United Kingdom, its people. Countries, business and communities, because that is where Brexit will have the most effect, not in the Westminster bubble. The speech's clarity has pleased a great many and has been met positively in Brussels. But as I have said many times, this is a negotiation, and no one gives away all their hand in a negotiation, and no one gets all they want. The five tests spelt out in the speech are a very good framework to make sure we keep to what is needed for the UK and the EU to succeed in the talks. In brief, they are: respect the result of the referendum, take back control of borders, laws and money, find an enduring deal, protect jobs and security, and finally, strengthen the UK. To go into further detail on what this means, for example, with regards to the European Court of Justice, Northern Ireland, and how much we continue to pay into EU institutions requires far more space than I'm afforded here. But what the speech does show is that the reality for everyone is simply this. No one, not leavers, not remainers, not the government, not the EU, not business, is going to get everything they wanted, and that's the reality the PM gave in the speech. What is up for grabs is the best possible deal with the best possible goodwill and compromise from all parties to get that deal done. Some simply can't go on about this is impossible, or that cannot happen, and I have to say that is fundamentally incorrect. Everything is possible in Brexit, just as much as it is complex and requires compromise. Of course, there remains opposition to the Prime Minister's efforts. Some do it from an ideological zeal to reverse the referendum result, or for some it's about political opportunism. I don't have to name names, and it is, of course, the right of any opposition to question the decisions of any government and even maybe light on the detail to boot. But to continually twist and turn the message and position to suit the pursuit of power without any principled position on such a fundamentally important chapter in our country's history is a dangerous policy. Of course, playing politics isn't going to stop on any side in this most political of issues, but I hope the PM's speech at least shows that there's no cake and eat it. There's no going back. There's no second referendum. There's no perfect solution. There's nothing that's impossible. There's just Brexit, within the framework tabled above, and the best one we can negotiate. So writes George Hollingbury, the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley.
Our next item is entitled Snow Time by Khalid Aziz. It has snowed. Hopefully by the time you read this, the beast from the east, also known as Storm Emma, will have retreated to her lair and life will be getting back to normal. It's been a while since Hampshire had such a serious snow. 8 years ago we had about a foot in January, but since then very little to speak of. So how did we cope? Well, there were the usual curmudgeonly charges of a bit of snow and the country grinds to a halt. But overall it looks as if the adversity brought out the best in most people. Social media really came into its own, offering warmth, sympathy and real practical help. Against an overwhelming outpouring of goodwill, the ghastly opinionated and cowardly trolls who normally dominate cyberspace kept quiet as they contemplated their screens with, as the estimable singer James Blunt puts it so prosaically, their trousers round their ankles. In the hub of the universe that is our glorious village of St. Mary Bourne, community spirits swung quickly into action. Regular reports of roads rendered impassable by drifting snow were quickly uploaded onto the village Facebook page and amended as required to reflect the passage of a snowplough or gritting lorry. A call went out to owners of four-wheel drives to volunteer to ferry doctors from the local surgery to call on the housebound. The response was immediate and positive. A local taxi firm, ANP, great for airport runs by the way, generously posted that their drivers are on the road and would run errands for those in need of free of charge. Just ring in. Someone else announced they were boiling up a large vat of vegetable soup to feed those wanting a hot meal. A plumber helpfully posted advice on thawing out frozen oil feed pipes. Of course, there were horror stories. A sad fatality on the A34 closed that vital north-south artery, stranding many as they rerouted courtesy of their sat-navs, only to find themselves in worse bother down narrow and untreated roads. Someone posted footage captured by dash cam of a large slab of frozen snow blown off a car in front and then smashing into the following car's windscreen, rendering it opaque. So badly was the glass crazed. A few weeks ago, we were in Slovenia, where they're used to serious snow. Over a metre fell in about 24 hours. The Slovenian police will spot fine you if you set off on a road on a journey and haven't cleared your car. There, within a few hours of snowfall, a well-oiled snow clearance programme has all the roads open and dry, despite 10 feet of snow piled up either side. Back home, people worried about getting to work. In our company, we have no hesitation in having our people work from home rather than brave the elements in vain and dangerous attempts to make it into work. Southwestern Railways wisely closed down their network rather than try against the odds to keep things rolling. Much better not to set out than get stranded and become someone else's problem. Of course, with the climate undoubtedly changing and certainly becoming more unpredictable, who knows what else there is to come? I can remember having Sunday lunch in Emsworth some years ago when a freak thunderstorm in July deposited a 3-inch thick carpet of gobstopper-sized hailstones all over our host's back garden. The argument goes that it's not cost-effective to invest for one in 100-year events. But recently we've seen too many such rare events happening more frequently than predicted. So perhaps we should think again. But let's not have an over-centralised solution. Weather, particularly snow, is often very localised. Let's put some power and responsibility back into our villages, even those which have been swallowed up by towns and cities. Then action will be swifter and more appropriate. What's more, it's more likely to harness that backs-to-the-wall community spirit that was so much in evidence in the last few days.
An advanced announcement that the 2018 AGM of the Winchester Talking Newspaper will be held on Tuesday, the 15th of May, at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall, and the speaker will be Councillor Jane Rutter. So I hope you can put that date in your diaries, and we look forward to seeing you then. They will remind you again, I'm sure, quite a few times over the coming weeks. Lighting up times. Sunrise is around 6:30 in the morning, and sunset is around 6 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with any recordings you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Yes, and the first item is headed Trust Softens the Blow. Hampshire Cultural Trust is taking measures to minimise the impact of job losses, leaked documents have shown. The documents, which follow consultations over job losses with staff at the Trust, show that bosses will reorganise the structure to keep historically and culturally impact artefacts conserved at the same level. Experts have been demanding reassurances that the vital artefacts will be protected after the job losses due to reduction in grants. Hampshire Cultural Trust, that's HCT, which was set up as an independent charity in 2014 to take over the running of Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council assets, runs museums around the county, including the city and Westgate Museums in Winchester. According to the documents, staff raised concerns about the impact of the changes, including that reducing the number of skilled conservators could be a false economy if HCT has to commission freelancers to fill the gaps. In response, the Trust said it would increase the headcount in the conservation team by one full-time employee to retain appropriate skills. The conservation roles automatically slot into the revised structure. There were also plans to cut the number of cultural engagement coordinators, which may have had a significant impact on the ability of Forest Arts and West End Centre to deliver current community programmes. Following the feedback, the Trust scrapped the planned reduction, with other ways of saving money to be investigated. A Trust spokeswoman confirmed voluntary redundancies has been arranged for 9.5 full-time equivalents, but 12 positions were set to be lost. The spokeswoman added that the possible compulsory reduction of 2.5 full-time equivalents had not been confirmed, and fewer positions may actually be lost. It is not known how staff responded to the measures, although a number of groups have expressed concern, including Botanical Society of Britain and Ireland.
National Prize for Local Brewery. A Winchester brewery has won a national award for its porter. Red Cat Brewing in Winnell won the Best Porter Award at the Great British Beer Festival Winter. Mr. M's Porter won gold at the Norwich Festival on February the 20th, after judges from Campaign for Real Ale deemed it the best from 10 porters which had been put forward from regional heats throughout the country. Red Cat brewer and proprietor Ian McIntosh said, "This is Red Cat's biggest award and a massive achievement for the brewery." The brewery started production in Winnell in March 2014. Red Cat's range of beers have won many other local awards, including gold at the Alton Winter Charity Beer Festival for their 6% stout Murmuration, named after Winnell's famous starling flocks. Red Cat's bar and shop in Sun Valley Business Park, Winnell, is open on Thursday and Friday evenings to 7 p.m. and on Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Meeting on future of NHS and social care. A meeting to hear about the future of health and social care in the region will be held in Winchester later this month. With a rapidly ageing population, the pressure is growing to unite the National Health Service and social care provision to cope with growing demand and the chronic issue of bed blocking. By 2039, over 65s will make up a quarter of the population, up from a fifth today. Winchester University and the Southern Policy Centre have assembled a panel of experts, chaired by Winchester and Chandlersford's MP Steve Brine, a junior health minister, to explore one of the greatest challenges facing society, meeting the needs of an ageing population. The issue is not just one for stretched public services. The health challenges older people face can put pressure on families, communities, and on our economy. Family carers may need to take time off work, face financial pressures, and may even themselves become ill through the stresses of caring. Confirmed speakers are Lord Filkin, Chairman of the Centre for Ageing Better, Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive, Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, and Graham Allen, Director of Adult Health and Care at Hampshire County Council. There will be an opportunity for questions and discussions after speakers' presentation. The aim is to further debate and improve understanding of the issue. The seminar, Health and Social Care, the Challenge Facing the Central South, will be on March the 22nd at 6:45 p.m. in the Stripe Lecture Theatre, the University of Winchester, Sparkford Road. It is free to attend, but you must register.
Long-awaited arrival for fashion chain. TK Maxx is due to open its doors to shoppers this morning after months of refurbishment at the Winchester Shopping Centre where it is based. The High Street fashion chain, which has created 32 jobs, is due to open its doors at 9 a.m. today. That presumably is Thursday the...
Thursday the yesterday. Thursday the 8th.
Thank you. joining fellow fashion brands Primark and New Look at the Brook Shopping Centre. However, it still has several long-term empty units. That's the Brooks, that is. And has only been fully let for around a year since opening in 1991. TK Maxx's arrival forms part of a £1 million revamp at the Brooks to boost its appeal to shoppers. The shopping centre is currently surrounded by scaffolding for work to revive the appearance, although the Brooks is remaining tight-lipped about how the end product will look. Following the ribbon cutting, the Brooks will be hosting a fashion-focused carnival with free professional stylist and makeup services on Saturday between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Shoppers can drop in and receive personal style consultation from professionals with no appointment is necessary. Each shopper will be handed a style guide to note down their fashion likes and dislikes, day-to-day routines, and where they usually shop to help experts handpick specific items. Just a note from me, because that refers to tomorrow, which is the 10th.
Yep.
And probably will be too late for any of your listeners to take advantage of.
Campaigners unconvinced by Bakkavor's River Stance. The director of a business dependent on the River Itchen has hit out at the chemicals set to be used by a salad washing company if they get their way. Hundreds of campaigners and activists have been calling on Bakkavor, I presume that's how you pronounce it, B-A-K-K-A-V-O-R, which runs Alsford Salads, to stop washing its leaves in chemicals harmful to the river and the valuable aquatic life within it. Gavin Lockhart-Mirrams, the director of the Glorious Game Sporting Company, a sporting agent that organises high-end fishing on Hampshire's chalk streams, said, "It is completely unacceptable that chemicals that are harmful to aquatic life are discharged into any river, let alone one of such importance. Local residents and riparian owners deserve great credit to have generated such focus on this issue. The Environment Agency must now act to be much more transparent about these applications so that firms can pollute the river, so that firms that pollute the river can be held to account." Our previously reported Bakkavor has sought to change the conditions of its Environment Agency discharge permit. Residents and campaigners have expressed fears that the chalk stream is being damaged by chemicals entering the water through salad washing. But this is disputed by Bakkavor. A spokesman said, "Bakkavor takes its environment responsibilities extremely seriously, and we are proud of our record of ensuring the highest levels of environmental safety across our business. We do not compromise on the exacting standards demanded by the Environment Agency and adhere to them as demonstrated through the results of regular testing by the EA and ourselves."
Sickness hit school reopens. Thorndon School was closed for 5 days after more than 250 youngsters were hit by a vomiting bug outbreak. The secondary school in Chandler's Ford reopened on Tuesday after a deep clean. This comes after students and staff members were affected by an outbreak of diarrhea and vomiting, whose cause is still being investigated. The school said it has received more than 250 reported cases of students being unwell. For two of the days of the outbreak, the school would have been closed because of the snow. Headteacher Sue Whelan said that while making no suggestion that the outbreak is linked to food served or prepared in school, they would ensure that all areas where food is produced, stored and served would undergo a thorough deep clean before being used again. The school had planned to carry out a deep clean over the weekend and before Monday, but the terrible weather prevented that. In an official statement, Ms. Whelan said, "While I accept that this will cause additional difficulty for many parents, we have had significant numbers of students and a number of staff who have become unwell, and I cannot allow the school to open again until we have done what is needed to prevent further sickness." She also said that an additional cleaning will be carried out the following weekend, and added, "I would like to thank parents for their continued support and helpful comments, and I hope that all youngsters and staff are starting to get through the worst of the conditions. The last few days have been difficult for many people, and I hope that we are now moving towards a solution. The school has been working with Public Health England and the Environment Health, but said that it may be unable to establish a clear cause. It said it hopes the 5-day break and deep clean will have removed the cause of the problem. The health authorities said they are doing all they can to prevent the risk of infection spreading further."
Marwell Zoo, among the best employers in the UK. Marwell Zoo is being hailed for being good to its staff. The zoo was named in the Sunday Times top 100 not-for-profit employers. Staff were asked questions over 8 areas: my manager, leadership, my company, personal growth, my team, giving something back, fair deal and well-being. The winners were announced at a gala dinner in London. Marwell was placed 13 out of 100 in the not-for-profit list. The charity employs 250 people, ranging from animal keepers, landscape and catering staff to conservation biologists and scientists in the UK and abroad. James Cretney, chief executive, said, "Our success is determined by our ability to operate as an effective team, delighting our guests and delivering our charitable work as we strive to inspire care and understanding for the natural world. We pride ourselves on a unique working environment which strongly embodies our values. What makes this achievement particularly rewarding is the feedback from our colleagues that feel happily motivated and empowered." And just a note from me is that not only do they look after their staff, I understand they also look after animals.
I was going to say, I thought those were more important to myself. MP Brine urges farmers to take part in a new green subsidy consultation. Wichita MP Steve Brine has welcomed a consultation which he says is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for landowners and farmers to shape the future of the English farming and the environment to ensure we create more resilient habitats, richer wildlife, healthier rivers and cleaner water. The government is consulting over what may replace the common agricultural policy once the UK leaves the European Union. Environment Secretary Michael Gove has suggested farmers could be paid not on their acreage, but what they do for the environment. Mr. Brine said, "Farmers, landowners and food producers have an opportunity to shape the future of English farming and the environment with this consultation. I have been clear locally that this area is one of my key interests as we leave the EU, and we will deliver a farming policy which works for the whole industry, ensuring that we leave our environment in a better state for future generations. The government's proposals will see money redirected from direct payments under the Common Agricultural Policy, which are based on the amount of land farmed, to a new system of paying farmers public money for public goods, principally their work to enhance the environment and invest in sustainable food production. In the meantime, the government will commit the same cash total in funds for farm support until the end of this parliament, due to be in 2022. Mr. Bryan added, "We have also set out proposals for an agricultural transition lasting a number of years beyond the implementation period, during which direct payments would continue providing stability and certainty for farmers as they prepare for the new system. We have an historic opportunity to deliver a farming policy which works for the whole industry. I am delighted the government is asking for the views of those who will be affected to make sure we get this right, so any future schemes reflect the reality of life for farmers and food producers, and I have already been in touch with the local National Farmers Union to ensure them and urge them to take part."
Father of three was found dead in shed after acting oddly with his family. A father of three was found hanging in his shed by his brother. Scott Friend's body was discovered by his brother Aaron in their shed at Petersfield Road, Hinton Abner. On the morning of October the 7th, Scott's wife, Helen, and his three daughters left the home they shared with Aaron and his father to go to Basingstoke. Helen Friend said, "When we left, he insisted on saying goodbye to me and kissing me. It was not like him. He also said goodbye to each of our three daughters individually, telling them that he loved them. He also gave me money and said to do something nice with the kids. He told me there was more money in the kitchen cupboard. We never kept money in the cupboard." The 43-year-old's brother, Aaron, also said that when he had seen Scott that morning, he told him, "I love you, brother," and gave him a hug. "This was something we did not do. We knew we loved each other. This was not normal behaviour," he said. Aaron left for Winchester and returned at around 2:30 p.m. His father, Ron, had come to visit, but Scott was nowhere to be found. "I went to look for him. I found Scott in the shed. I knew he was dead," Aaron added. The landscape gardener had never been diagnosed with depression and was seen as the life and soul of the party. His brother said he was happily married and had no financial concerns. However, his wife, Helen, believed that he may have suffered from anxiety and depression. "He would often bottle things up. He often got worried about work, but there was no reason for him to. He would often go to the pub. We argued about this occasionally, but I believe now that it was just his way of coping." Senior coroner Graham Short said, "I believe he suffered from depression and a low image of himself. Many men are reluctant to seek help for mental health problems, which is regrettable because then they can get help." Mr. Short concluded that Scott Friend's death was the result of suicide.
Eileen Davies turns 100. A Winchester woman has just turned 100 years of age. Eileen Davies was born on March 7th, 1918, whilst the Great War was raging, and brought up in Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, near the goods yard at the railway station. Although named Dorothy, she's always been known as Eileen. After leaving school, she was in service at Winchester College, in the kitchens at Wolvesley Palace, the Bishop of Winchester's residence, and later was housekeeper at a house in St. Cross. During the Second World War, she helped to man a first aid post at St. Faith's Church Hall in St. Cross. in 1942 at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, which was close to her home in Stockbridge Road, Fulford, she married Thomas Hubert Davis, known as David. He worked for the Ordnance Survey in Southampton and was a well-known judge at flower, village flower and produce shows. In the 1950s, they moved into a brand new house on the newly built Week Estate. She worked as a dinner lady at Week schools and attended St Barnabas Church, also at Week, where she was a very active member, contributing much to its early days, not least within the Sunday school. She lived in her house at Week until a few years ago when she moved into Flowerdown Care Home, Hairstock Road, Hairstock. Yesterday, surrounded by her family, she celebrated in a very quiet way her achievement. For her family, it was a chance to get together, to have a natter and catch up.
Open doors. A Winchester care home is opening its doors to the local community at a series of events. Brendan Care Park Road has organised several events open to all residents, families, friends and the local community. On Wednesday, March the 21st, Frying High, a local fish and chip service, would be frying up outside the care home in Park Road for all to enjoy their delicious fish and chips. The following Saturday, March the 24th, there will be an Easter Fun Open Day. Activities will include an Easter egg hunt, and all fingers are crossed for a live egg hatching on the day. On Saturday, April the 7th, there is a tabletop sale. Items will include homemade cakes, retro goods, handbags and jewellery. Refreshments will also be served. Janet Graham, activities coordinator at the home, said, "We are really excited to have so much going on at Park Road, where we can invite our friends from the local community. It makes our residents very happy to have lots of people visit the home and join in the fun." More information about Brendan Care Park Road can be found by phoning 01962 869 287. I'll repeat that, 01962 869 287.
Winchester's branch of restaurant chain Prezzo will remain open after plans to shut 94 stores were announced. However, two Southampton branches of the major Italian restaurant chain are to close after the company went into administration. Prezzo is undergoing a restructure and has announced 94 stores that will shut, including all of its Chimichanga restaurants. Prezzo on Oxford Street, Southampton, and Chimichanga on the same road will be closing. Chimichanga in Eastleigh will also be shutting, with the leases terminated in the next 8 weeks. Despite the closures, Prezzo in Rumsey, Winchester, Jury Street, Lymington, Eastleigh and Whiteley are all to remain open. Prezzo say they will do everything possible to move staff to other sites.
Helping wildlife through the cold snap in Hampshire. Freezing conditions and snow-covered ground present great difficulties for wildlife, and a cold snap right at the end of winter can be particularly problematic. Food sources such as seeds are almost entirely exhausted, and the sudden temperature drop will bring a sharp halt to the growth of any plants which may have provided additional sustenance. However, there are some simple things you can do at home to help your local wildlife get through the cold snap. Provide fresh water. When puddles and ponds are frozen over, it can be difficult for wildlife to find fresh drinking water. Providing a bowl of clean, unfrozen water can be an invaluable lifeline for a variety of species. To be sure to check that the bird baths haven't frozen over, and refresh water bowls regularly if you can. Reduce disturbance. Consuming and retaining energy is vitally important for wildlife right now, so try to reduce the disturbance in areas where animals may be foraging. For example, steer clear of badger sets in woodland areas and avoid flocks of gulls and waders if you're about enjoying the coastline. Running, flying away from humans uses up an awful lot of energy that could be used to keep warm. Feed the birds. Keeping warm in low temperature requires a lot of energy, so making high-fat foods easily available for garden birds is a great way to help them. Fat balls and peanuts are particularly good during cold snaps, as they are high in fat, which helps keep birds warm. If you're feeling crafty, you can even make your own bird feeders. Simply melt suet into moulds. Coconut shells or logs with holes drilled in make excellent containers. Then, once they have cooled and solidified, leave them somewhere high up in your garden for the birds to find. Nature Notes. Thanks to our dedicated volunteers, Barton Meadows Nature Reserve near Winchester now has a brand new log circle where visitors can sit and enjoy stunning views of the countryside. The work took place on Wednesday. It was extremely cold and the meadows were icy, but the team was undeterred and did a marvellous job despite the freezing conditions. Local playwright and conservation volunteer Jonathan Edgington has been working with us to improve Barton Meadows Nature Reserve. He said, "This is a fantastic project that I am thoroughly enjoying working on with the lovely people in Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. I can't wait to see the end result."
A man aged 29 drank himself to death. A loving and extremely popular Winchester man was found dead behind a city doctor's surgery, more than six times the drink drive limit, an inquest heard. Alan Meyer, aged 29, was discovered by a woman heading to work at the Friarsgate practice in Week at around 7:20 a.m. on September the 28th, along with a bottle of brandy, but was already dead. Winchester Coroner's Court heard that Mr. Meyer of Compline Place, Week, had been abandoned by his mother in Ecuador days after being born and was adopted by Patricia and Thomas Meyer, before being brought back to the UK at the age of two. Miss Meyer, who split up with her then-husband several years ago, said that he was troubled and developed an alcohol problem in his mid-teens, but added he had lots of friends, he was extremely popular, he was very fit and played a lot of sport. He was an avid cook. The inquest also heard that despite numerous attempts to help Mr. Meyer to get past his alcohol problems, the issue only became worse. Miss Meyer, who ran as the Liberal Democrat candidate in the St. Barnabas Ward during the 2015 Winchester City Council elections and is currently chairwoman of the St. Barnabas Community Planning Group, said that in April her son travelled to Ecuador and Colombia to take part in volunteering projects, but returned in August after alcohol problem continued to be a problem. Dr. Helen Crossley, a consultant at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, said that since 2015, Mr. Meyer had been admitted to A&E more than 30 times for alcohol-related problems. The inquest heard that Mr. Meyer also suffered with anxiety, for which he used alcohol as self-medication. Recording a conclusion of alcohol-related death, Senior Coroner Graham Short said he was unsure that when Mr. Meyer died, as he was last seen at around 1:30 p.m. the afternoon before he was discovered. Mr. Short added, "I think he was a troubled soul. It is very sad he ended his life in this way. He was clearly well-liked." Mr. Meyer's adoptive father, Thomas, who also attended the inquest, said, "He was a kind, sharing and devoted son and friend. I miss him very much." His mother, Andrea Lewis, added, I would like Alan to be remembered as a kind and loving person. Since his death, a number of friends have paid their respects to Mr. Meyer on his Facebook page. Kate Daniels said, "There have been so many funny times over the years, and there is no way you will be forgotten." While Tom Shaw wrote, "As much as we will miss him, there's a lot we can learn from Alan, one of the most outgoing people I have ever known."
Run milestone. Winchester Park Run is celebrating its fifth anniversary this spring. The community run event at River Park has boosted public interest in running. It is free to enter, and is held every Saturday. It celebrates its fifth anniversary of 5 kilometre runs on Saturday, April the 28th. This Saturday, March the 10th, will be its 250th event. David Howells, one of the organisers, said, "We think that is quite an achievement, especially as all park runs are organised entirely by volunteers and a completely free entry. It is a great community activity and very well supported by Winchester City Council." He said some runners were marking the birthday by raising the funds for a defibrillator to be permanently based at the River Park Recreation Ground and available for anyone in need.
Medieval Bible to inspire floral festival. Tickets are now on sale for Winchester Cathedral's annual flower festival. Illumination, a festival of flowers, runs from September the 5th to the 9th, with a stunning array of flower arrangements inspired by the Winchester Bible, the largest and finest surviving 12th century English Bible. This year's festival follows two spectacular flower festivals in recent years, and the cathedral will once again be transformed by striking and fragrant displays. Visitors will be invited to immerse themselves in a riot of colour and admire a variety of arrangements invoking the Bible's exquisite illuminated initials and elaborate decorative schemes coloured with gold and lapis lazuli. The festival will also offer visitors the opportunity to find out more about the Bible before all four volumes of this medieval masterpiece go on display in the cathedral's new multi-million pound exhibition Kings and Scribes from Winter 2018. Creative Director Angela Turner returns to the festival, having designed the festival in 2013. She's a regular exhibitor at the Chelsea Flower Show and has won several Royal Horticultural Society gold medals. Her flair and understanding of the cathedral will result in a spectacular event. Amongst others, most of the arrangers themselves will come from across the region's NAFAS, which stands for the National Association of Flower Arranging Societies.
From Tintin to Alice and the Tiger Who Came to Tea. Winchester School hope to have a week of activities to encourage reading and a love of books. But Winnell Primary School ended up staging it over a second week after the snow disrupted World Book Day last Friday. Year 6 teacher Vicky Gunning said the school on Garbett Road had decided to have a bigger event than just a day, and so there had been several events last week. Around 60 parents had taken part in Snuggle Up with a Book in the main hall, and a Tuesday local bookshop, P&G Wells, staged a book fair. There was a book exchange where pupils swapped titles on Wednesday. The World Book Day event was held on Monday, and 170 children dressed up in their favourite fictional characters. There were lots of Harry Potters and Hermione's, a Wally or two, Alice in Wonderland, The Mad Hatter, Matilda, Dennis the Menace, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Lone Ranger, Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, The Tiger Who Came to Tea, Superman, and even Tintin. As I read these out, I'm frantically looking at the colour photograph of the children in their various outfits. I can recognise one or two, but being a little, rather old, my nursery rhyme stories are in the dim and distant past, and so I may not recognise them all, but they all look so happy, and it's such a joy to see them, and so proud of their costumes and things that possibly fond mums have made and so on. But anyway, Miss Gunning said that the Parent Teacher Association, the Friends of Winnell Priory, had bought every pupil a book. Now, isn't that lovely to mark the day? We haven't done a book week for several years, she said. The children were very engaged and have been very keen to join in. And the parents have been very supportive too, said Miss Gunning. What a joy to see.
What a great story to end our extracts for the week.
Very much so.
Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
Paul Newman.
Farewell.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put the address label inside the envelope.